Thank you for that introduction, and thank you all for being here. In my dissertation research on mixed cool season perennial pastures, one forage species of particular interest to us is tall fescue, and its association with an asexual above-ground fungal endophyte, Epicloe sinophaela, which if you've been to most of the presentations today, you've already heard a little bit about. For those of you who are not familiar with this relationship, it's often termed a defensive mutualism, where in exchange for nutrients and a mode of reproduction, the common toxic endophyte confers increased competitive ability to its host tall fescue, such as through increased drought tolerance or herbivory resistance. Unfortunately, common toxic endophyte or CTE strains produce ergot alkaloids to deter mammalian herbivory, which are known to harm livestock animals, such as through reduced reproductive success or impaired heat tolerance. In response to this, researchers have developed non-toxic or novel endophyte strains, or NE, which have been isolated from wild populations and inserted into various agronomic cultivars of tall fescue. These strains do not produce ergot alkaloids, which harm livestock animals, but still produce other types of alkaloids, which deter insect herbivory. So not only can we see how presence of the endophyte impacts plant and plant microbial interactions, but also how genotypic variation in this endophyte impacts these effects. Another aspect of pastures that I'm interested in is biological nitrogen fixation. Producers are increasingly willing to invest in legumes for their pastures, which provide basically a cheap source of nitrogen through bacterial symbioses, which fix nitrogen from the atmosphere during biological nitrogen fixation. These are commonly added to pastures to reduce reliance on fertilizer or to increase forage quality or animal productivity. Unfortunately, we see that pastures with a low abundance of common toxic endophyte infected, or CTE plus tall fescue, naturally moves over time to have a very high abundance of CTE plus tall fescue due to its increased competitive ability. And this is accompanied by further decreases in plant diversity, which is a big problem for legumes. Little research has investigated the effects of endophytes or tall fescue specifically on legume suppression. Older studies in endophyte-infected perennial ryegrass, which houses a similar Epicloe endophyte, show that even three strains of this endophyte did decrease white clover growth, but we're not sure how this would translate to tall fescue exactly. Other studies showed that both endophyte-infected and endophyte-free tall fescue extracts reduced legume germination, and we're not sure exactly what the mechanism is for this suppression, but some studies have found that it's not due to nodulation really either. We're also not sure how other genotypic strains of this endophyte interact with other plants, such as legumes. And so this has yet to be studied as well. We're just now starting to look at the impacts of novel endophytes. In addition, legumes are not the only providers of nitrogen in mixed pastures. Free-living soil, nitrogen-fixing soil microorganisms also fix nitrogen from the atmosphere. And little research to date has investigated the effects of common toxic endophyte tall fescue on soil microorganisms. In our study, we asked whether both the presence and the strain of Epicloe sinophaela in tall fescue impacted the amount of nitrogen derived from both symbiotic and non-symbiotic biological nitrogen fixation, and how this nitrogen is used in co-occurring tall fescue. We hypothesized that differences in genetic variation in this endophyte, in addition to the presence of the endophyte, would cause distinct differences in how much nitrogen is fixed and how much nitrogen is accessed by tall fescue. For example, CTE plus tall fescue may be more competitive for nitrogen uptake or for different pools which is taken up from in tall fescue. Perhaps because of this, both symbiotic and non-symbiotic providers of nitrogen may suffer through reductive effects on legume health or microbial abundance. The study was conducted at the University of Kentucky's Spindletop Research Farm in Lexington, Kentucky, using a PDF or pasture demonstration farm variety of tall fescue provided by the Noble Foundation, which had various endophyte treatments in its seed. It was established in 2008 as a randomized complete block design with 6 blocks and 5 treatments each. Tall fescue seeded in monoculture in each plot was either endophyte-free, the E-, infected with a common toxic endophyte strain, CTE+, or one of 2 novel endophytes, AR542 or AR584 NE+. And our 5th treatment was a mixture of seed from each of the 4 previous endophyte treatments. You notice that I didn't mention legumes in my site description. That's because these weren't planted as mixed species pastures, but they become mixed species over time. One of the reasons for doing this study was that 2011 happened to be a very good year for red clover in these plots, which were not planted during site establishment, but were at the site previously and germinated from the seed bank. So we took advantage of this in addition to our experimental design and collected 3 forage samples from each of our endophyte treatment plots. We collected red clover, the RC, or a tall fescue that was paired with that red clover growing right next to it, TF plus RC, or a tall fescue that was not paired with red clover. It was spatially isolated, located elsewhere in the plot. So this is a TF minus RC samples. We also collected soil samples in May of 2011 from the upper 10 centimeters in each plot. The primary method I used to assess nitrogen cycling in this study was measurement of 2 stable isotopes making up the nitrogen in dried plant samples. This is where delta 15N indicates how the ratio of the heavy rare isotope 15N compared to the lighter, more common isotope 14N measured in plant samples deviates from a standard reference ratio, and I'll usually just call it delta N or N15. What this tells us, theoretically, is where the nitrogen came from in this plant material. The key assumption here is that biological transformations of nitrogen discriminate very heavily against the 15 isotope. These transformations happen very rapidly. The heavier N15 gets left behind, and the product is composed of more 14N compared to 15N. So this leads to some natural differences in the N15 signature across various terrestrial pools. For example, soil 15N generally has a positive delta N compared to that standard ratio. Soil pools have undergone lots of biological transformations over time, and that's the 14N has been cycled out, so it's accumulated more 15N. Whereas plant samples, their N15 signature tends to reflect where they got their nitrogen. Legumes, for example, depend very heavily on biological nitrogen fixation, starting with atmospheric N2 gas, which naturally has an N15-14 ratio very close to zero. It's actually used as a reference standard. So we expect the delta N of legumes to be either at zero or less than zero, as the what 15N is left has already been discriminated against. Non-fixing grasses, if they're getting their nitrogen from more soil pools, which has a positive N15, we expect their N15 signature to reflect to be a little bit closer to what that soil 15 was, not quite up to it, but a little bit lower. Whereas if they're using fixed nitrogen from legume sources, we expect their N15 signature to look a little bit closer to where that legume is, a little bit more negative or a little bit closer to zero. So this is one of the key things that I'll be talking about in a minute. I also assessed the potential activity of free-living soil microorganisms using acetylene reduction assays. This is where, in the laboratory, acetylene is used as a substitute substrate for the nitrogenase enzyme employed by soil microbes. During nitrogen fixation, this acetylene is converted to ethylene, which after an incubation period is measured on a GC, and we use that as a proxy for nitrogen fixation activity by free-living soil microbes. Significant effects of our endophyte treatment and the forages collected were detected using a PROC mix model in SAS, and significant differences between means were detected using the LS means table with significant p-values less than 0.05. First, I should note the actual amount of tall fescue or red clover in each of my plots. On the y-axis, we have the relative abundance as a percentage of total vegetative cover in each of these plots for each species, and these are based on visual estimates. You'll notice that the endophyte treatments in tall fescue had a major impact on how much tall fescue was in each of these plots, was covering each of these plots, especially between the endophyte-free tall fescue, which had a lot less tall fescue covering the plots, versus the common toxic endophyte-infected tall fescue, which had a lot more tall fescue covering each of these plots. And this is kind of a normal pattern that we see across a lot of studies and over time. And this study had been established when these samples were taken for about 3 years. However, endophyte treatment in tall fescue didn't have that large of an impact on how much red clover was in each of these plots. So differences in nitrogen fixation that I'm about to talk about may not necessarily be due to how much red clover was actually in each of my plots. These are the results of my measurement of stable isotopes N. Along the y-axis, this is the delta N values that I found in these forage samples. Right off the bat, you'll notice that the red clover, the RC samples, are the most negative. That means that they're depending the most heavily on biologically fixed nitrogen from their bacterial symbiosis, although there wasn't a significant impact of what the tall fescue endophyte treatment was on how much nitrogen was being fixed by red clover or how it was depending on nitrogen fixation. The tall fescue samples also were a little negative, but not as negative as the red clover. So they were depending a lot on fixed N products, but they're still pulling a little bit upwards more towards what the soil value would be. So they're not relying entirely on fixed nitrogen. We saw significant differences in where the tall fescue was on how much fixed nitrogen it was accessing, though, in addition to different strains of endophyte that were in tall fescue. When the tall fescue was right next to the red clover, The common toxic endophyte infected and the AR584, in addition to the endophyte free, access the most fixed nitrogen in the tall fescue, especially compared to the AR542. This isn't quite what we hypothesized, but it is a great example of how genotypic variation in endophyte impacts its interactions with other plants and soil microbes. When you move away from the red clover in the plot, only the endophyte free tall fescue was still accessing those fixed end products. While we saw differences in how much and what type of nitrogen was being accessed by tall fescue in relation to where it was in endophyte treatment and where it was next to the red clover, this didn't impact how much nitrogen was actually in the tall fescue. There was no impact of endophyte treatment on percent nitrogen, which you see on the y-axis on either of my tall fescue samples. On the other hand, it did impact how much nitrogen was actually in the red clover. Red clover from TTE plus plots in particular had less nitrogen in their plant tissue than from the endophyte free or the 542 plots. And again, we see a big difference in how much nitrogen was in red clover between these two novel endophytes. You may be wondering how this compares to the slide that I just showed. This actually mirrors that pattern that I saw in infixation in red clover, where the red clover in CTE plus or 584 plots that had the least nitrogen in their tissue were the most negative in N15, so they were relying more heavily on biological nitrogen fixation, but they had less of that N was making it into their own tissue. So this is evidence for stimulation of biological nitrogen fixation in the red clover through increased transfer to other plants, such as tall fescue. In my assays of potential nitrogen fixation by free-living or non-symbiotic soil microorganisms, this was also not significantly impacted by endophyte treatment in tall fescue in these soil samples. Along the y-axis, this is ethylene production, which again was that substitute, what was the result of that substitute substrate for nitrogen gas. However, what I saw here did also mirror that N15, the infixation in red clover. So the samples such as CTE plus or the AR542 novel endophyte had the most free living nitrogen fixing activity, and they also, the red clover in those plots, were depending more heavily on biological nitrogen fixation. So while these patterns weren't quite significant, they do complement each other and they do warrant further study in the future, and I'm certainly interested in that. Overall, we found that endophyte infection and strain had differing effects on nitrogen dynamics in both tall fescue and of neighboring red clover. For example, when tall fescue is located right next to red clover, endophyte-free, the common toxic strain, and one of the novel strains were accessing more of the fixed nitrogen from that red clover. When tall fescue moves away from red clover, only endophyte-free tall fescue is still utilizing those fixed-end products. We also saw multiple pieces of evidence for stimulation of biological nitrogen fixation from different strains of tall fescue. Overall, the take-home message is that different effects of endophyte strain on tall fescue's ability to utilize fixed nitrogen and on how much nitrogen is actually contained in your legumes will impact future selection of which novel endophyte that you want in your mixed species pasture, especially between AR542 and 584, which is two of our treatments in this study. So with that, I would like to thank my funding source and my major advisor, Dr. Rebecca McCulley, and everyone who helped me conduct these analyses. And I'll be happy to take your questions now. Yes?
I was curious, do you use the same genotype with varying endophyte genotypes, or were they different tall-fescue genotypes with different endophytes?
Right. You're asking, is it different endophyte genotypes in the same tall fescue, or are they different tall fescue genotypes as well?
Yes.
Okay. This was the same tall fescue cultivar, the pasture demonstration variety of tall fescue. So maybe a little bit of genotypic differences between individual plants and stuff, but the same variety with different endophyte genotypes of that same strain within those tall fescue seeds. And this was part of a larger study that was conducted at the Noble Foundation. Actually, like a certain cultivar endophyte type was marketed as a result of that study at Noble. The 584 endophyte is the one that eventually got selected to be commercialized.
One more?
Yes.
How comfortable are you that your visual estimates of the percentage of grass and legume represent the reality? It seems peculiar you would use visual estimates for one aspect of your study when you're doing very sophisticated studies for determination of the percentage of nitrogen from fixed and other sources?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty covered. How comfortable am I with our visual estimates of this? I'm pretty comfortable with them. We used a Dobereiner scale, so it wasn't just someone, you know, standing out there and saying, that looks like about 80% tall fescue. You know, they were actually, you know, comparing it to standard values and seeing, you know, that they were quantifying a little more precisely than that. But I'm pretty comfortable with it. And then the N15 stable isotope measurements, it is kind of a sophisticated technique, but there is a lot of error associated with that as well. So I think they're pretty comparable.